the June 20th this year in Rabbi and Revitz and Rosenfels home in Yerushalayim. Okay, so I wanted to take up, I guess the general topic is the early life, so to speak, of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, in general, I think anyone who reads the Torah, we read about great people. For example, the Avos and the 12 sons. We read about great people throughout the Torah. But at least I feel this way. I'm sure all of us feel this way. We would really like to know a little bit more about them. The Torah doesn't give that much information.
From the water to murdering the Egyptian.
Yeah, it doesn't give you much information. We'd like to know, what is it that made them such outstanding, what great people, and so on and so forth. Sometimes it's supplemented by some information which is not written in the Torah, but from Midrashim, as we see in the case of Avraham Avinu. Okay, the whole story about the fact that his father was a manufacturer of idols, and that at a certain point he destroyed the idols, and so on and so forth, that's not contained in the Torah itself. But in general, do we really know any of these people? It's not biographical. The Torah is very, very skimpy when it comes to biographical, such that, I mean, you read a biography of someone, assuming it's a good biography, and you get a certain sense. You can feel what his personality was like. Did he have a sense of humor, and how did he deal with situations? That you don't get in the Torah. What the Torah will convey are the greatness of the deeds, the greatness of their wisdom, how they reacted to certain situations, but we don't really know their inner life. I would say the most, but would you say that you get a little bit more than the normal? Well, let me ask you another question. Who's your favorite character in the Bible? I'll use the word Bible because I'm the Torah, including the Nach. Mm-hmm. Who would you say, this person I can identify with?
Yaakov, because we know a lot.
Yaakov you can identify with? Okay, there's no right
or maybe you're talking about favorites, or just, you know,
yes. Yeah, who you identify with? Someone you would like to meet. I'll put it a different way. If you could meet any one or any two, I'll give you two. Could be a male or a female, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Who would you like, that's it, you won a contest, you get to meet with your two
right.
favorite biblical characters.
And
they're coming back just to meet with you. So, you know, like... you can identify with a certain amount what he went through with his brothers.
Yeah, he's much more...
Yeah,
described.
There's more.
I mean,
right.
He's much
you also... It really attributes... Because, again, the Torah doesn't really describe too much emotion. But you see, a lot, he was very emotional when he cried. Every time when the brothers... and he has to treat them in a certain way, but it bothers him, and he's crying a lot. And... So that's one. Anybody else comes to mind?
Ruth.
Ruth, okay, I can see that. Ruth is a great, great person. True. To me, again, it's personal, is David HaMelech. Like I think I mentioned that last week, like historical events you would have liked him in there. I would have loved to see how he dealt with Goliath, you know. But in other cases, he was a very... The Torah does give you...
Yeah, he got a lot of...
He went through real life experiences
with his
own children and his own, and the Torah describes the fact that he was nechshal, he sinned, but he came back. See, for me, the greatness about David, I have my names, my descriptions. Yosef I call the champion of forgiveness. If you think of the ability to forgive the brothers after everything they did to him, that's the champion. I always use him as the example of forgiveness. David HaMelech, the champion of
Tshuva.
Not just that he did tshuva, but he wasn't destroyed by his sin. He wasn't destroyed by it. Most people are destroyed by sin. That's it. They give up and they withdraw. He didn't withdraw. He faced it. He acknowledged it. And did tshuva. But then he went back to being the... He never said, I can't be the king anymore. You know, I mean, a lot of people have that feeling that they just want to crawl away. That's it. They're too embarrassed to continue.
I think he was a bit of a favorite son, though.
That's because of Hashem loved him, true, because of his characteristics and what he did. I don't know that God. We can't really say God has favorites in the sense that we have favorites.
No, but I'm saying
because then we have favorites because it's an emotionally appealing thing. But by God, it's objective.
Well, he has favorites in as much as Am Yisrael is.
Am Yisrael. The Gemara says that. The Gemara says.
Right.
And the Gemara says the reason is because I only commanded them to bench, to make his mother when you mm-hmm. when you're satisfied, but they went ahead and they extended even when you just have a kezias. So I shouldn't show favoritism to them. That's what the Gemara says. It's very interesting. Let's take up a little bit about Moshe Rabbeinu, because the Torah doesn't give us much. It gives us two incidents in his life, and they're pretty much similar. And then the next thing, he's by the burning bush. And,
right.
So let's see what we can glean from that. I want to do some parts of the background of the story. Okay.
So which?
We're in Shemos.
Yeah. Gimel.
No. Eric.
Essentially from what I would call, it was in chapter 2, basically from the point of the miraculous birth.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, it wasn't the... I'm sorry, I take that back. Well, Yocheved wasn't Yayan. According to some, she was miraculous.
It was miraculous.
She was over 100 years. That's a whole machlokas already. Is that the correct age? I don't exactly... 100 and what, according to Rashi? According to Rashi, she was about 100 and...
She was really... Oh, they worked out.
Yeah. But the others disagree and say if that's the case, it would have been a greater than Ace than a greater miracle than when Sarah had recorded it. Whatever. But the miraculous existence, the fact that he survived. We'll call it survival, because he wasn't supposed to survive. Because right. That was the time that you had the decree that Kol Ben Elod, every son that's born should be cast into the Nile. He tried to get it through, but that's another great story. Maybe if we, I don't know how much time we'll have for the, when I'm here, about the Mialdos, the midwives who saved his life. But that's not for tonight. So they kept him for 3 months. Okay.
So what was Moshe's real name?
We're going to take that up. That becomes part of the shiur tonight.
Okay.
So they... Chapter 2. First it talks about the reunion of Amram and Yocheved. I'm not going to see... Each pasuk has so many ideas. I'm not focusing on that tonight. They reunited... According to the rabbis, at the advice of Miriam, she predicted that her mother would give birth to the one who would save Klal Yisrael. Okay, she became pregnant, she had a son, and they saw that he was good, which is a strange thing to say. I mean, every baby is good, right? Especially if it's your own. And they hid him.
Did he fill the room with light?
Yeah. And they, we'll have reference to that, what Chazal were trying to tell us. And they hid him for 3 months. They were able to hide him for 3 months. But they couldn't hide him any longer. So then, it's a strange way to try and save him.
Right, put him in a little basket.
They put him in a little basket, and they covered it with pitch and whatever, so the water shouldn't seep in. And they put the child in it.
Whoops.
And they put it by the waters, by the banks of the waters. I don't know what the... one can ask, what's the kind of strategy is that? How's that going to save? How's the baby going to survive in that environment? Okay. Again, I'm just going through a lot of things. I'm sorry?
I'm just trying to think. If he was 3 months old, his birthday was now, right?
Yes.
So that's like the height of the summer.
Okay. Good point.
Water could have been low.
But the point is, how can a baby survive? What kind of plan is that? Interesting, during the Holocaust, many parents would give their children to Christians. And that hopefully they would save them, and then if
so, maybe this was a thought also.
If
that
they
you,
would,
somebody would find him. I think that's
yeah.
part of the idea.
I would say not just somebody would find them. I'd go even further. I would say it wasn't purely by chance that the daughter of Paro.
No, they knew that she bathed.
And they might have known that she wasn't exactly at peace with the father's policy.
Right.
She was in conflict with it, and they were hoping because. The ordinary Egyptian, I mean, it's possible that an ordinary Egyptian could take pity on a child. It's possible. But I would say that it's logical to say that they knew a little bit about her, that she was the king's daughter. She was a sympathetic person, as we will see.
With Shifra and Pua, if they were Egyptians, and the daughter was not so keen on dad's policy, there could have been some sort of a... underground going on with the women, because women are not very cool about killing babies.
Put in a basket, but that somehow he would be found by somebody and kept alive.
That was the idea that somebody would find him. Clearly, has to be the plan. Otherwise, how long can a baby survive?
Right.
Not to mention there could be crocodiles, but he's got to be fed. Okay, so clearly that was the idea. I say it's not crazy to assume that they had a suspicion that the daughter of Paro. Then it says, "Vateisatzav achosum erachok." So Miriam, and this is considered to be a great deed for some reason, that she planted herself at the distance to see. Lodeya mayayosa lo, to see what would be done, what's going to happen with him. Then it says, "Vateirid bas Paro lirchot." Okay, so that's amazing. Good fortune? Was that just luck, you know, right place, right time? We'll see. She went down to wash by the Yaor. Now, the fact that she washed over there wouldn't be a secret. People would know that. That's why I'm saying it's not crazy to say that that's what they were hoping for. And her maidens were walking along the banks, and she saw the teva. She saw the basket. Okay. Vatishlach asamasa vatikachav. I'm not going to do the Rashi that says that her hands
and where it's very long, right?
Okay, I don't midrashim like that, which talk about miraculous things happening. In my opinion, need to be interpreted. So, right. But the plain, you don't have to. That's not the plain pshat.
How about if you interpret it as her heart went out for him?
Okay,
no,
fine.
Or she went the length. I mean,
yeah,
the point is she went.
Yeah, she had a stretch. Let's put it this way: she definitely had a stretch.
She had.
No, because she was in a state of conflict. It wasn't a simple
right,
thing.
Right.
Because
it would be as if Hitler's daughter saved a Jew.
Yeah,
and
right, exactly.
That would be tantamount as if her hand extended, just like the ordinary
you know,
lead. That
you have to really
hand
overcome. You have to overcome your basic nature.
Conflict. Yeah,
right.
But they're a good point.
That's miraculous.
This is a good point that we sort of worked out together because it shows you that we shouldn't just take these things literally. When you do so, you're not going to get any ideas out of that. And again, if it's a miracle, so why isn't it described openly? That would be a huge
miracle. And God said that,
and also, why would it even be necessary? It wasn't necessary for a miracle because she could have sent one of our girls to get it. So, okay. So this is a good, example of what we have to do, how we should approach these things. Now, I might try to approach a midrash, I wouldn't be able to. Don't assume that we could figure out every midrash. So there are different levels of midrash, but you should try. Okay, so then it says that she opened it up, and she saw the yelad, and vine nar boche, and it was a crying
baby,
a little cry baby. Although the rabbis do say that the angel Gabriel came and gave a little ouch, and he started crying.
I did it
too hard. I got so enthusiastic, but I'm not going to cry.
Okay.
So, and she said. What's the question that we should ask on this pasuk? Because also I want to sort of like illustrate a little bit of how to approach it and what types of questions we should ask as we're... So therefore, if you can learn sort of the method of how to learn Chumash, it'll be much more enhanced when you learn, b'chavruto, or you learn by yourself. What question would you ask on this pasuk? She said, he's one of the Jewish babies. What?
Well, she had pity on him. He said that she had pity on him.
Okay.
And then she said...
That's fine. The only thing I would ask, though, is... What do I need to know that he was crying? A baby cries. I mean, that's a trivial fact.
Have you ever been in a restaurant and a baby cries?
Yeah.
And you see all the women turn around.
Okay, so what are you saying?
Well, that it's almost like a
pulls
automatic...
on your heartstrings.
It does. It pulls on your heartstrings. It's an automatic...
But why is it necessary to tell me that? Why is it necessary that she's a woman?
Because maybe
she's a woman. He's a baby. Women grow up.
Assuming that you're a man reading this,
and if she was in conflict,
that resolved the conflict.
In other words, the fact that he was crying is essential to the story.
Yeah, she looked.
Had he not been crying, the outcome might have been different.
Yeah,
because we're saying she was in conflict.
Yeah.
So before.
She thought he was a Hebrew.
A Hebrew. Before she pronounced that he's a Hebrew.
Cried.
That could mean two things.
No, but as soon as he cried, all of a sudden her heart melted.
In other words, before
she
announced that he was a Hebrew.
You understand that she stretched out and took him in. That's right off. Unless she didn't see there was a baby.
At that point, she's investigating.
When she stretched out her hand, did she know there was a baby in the basket? Don't see that.
She didn't know, but she might have suspected it. It's a strange
thing.
And I would say
she opened and then she saw it. So she only saw the first time.
You have an instinctive reaction to certain things, but it's not. They haven't been verified. She was attracted to that basket. And the unconscious already,
so,
I'm sure she knew. She knew. But then you have to... Now, what I'm saying is like this. I agree. That is, that the fact that he cried at that moment was not an accident. It was decreed by a higher power that he should cry. Why?
That resolved her conflict.
Because if you're in a state of conflict about something, and it's not a simple matter, of course you're retired, but... what can I do? A lot of people, what can I do? Who am I? In Germany, there were people that were disturbed, didn't want it to, but they looked the other way. What can I do?
And maybe people were crying all the time.
Yeah, I can't help it. You'll see that.
Right.
You go to Yad Vashem, you see all the videos of people are dying in the street and other people are going about their business. You know, what can I do? Nothing I can do about it. But I would say that when you're in that state and you're in a conflict, one emotional thing could push you over the fence. In that, if he had not been crying, she could have turned away. But the fact that he cried and it grabbed her, she couldn't turn away.
Yeah.
She couldn't turn away. That's when she pronounced. So in other words, at the time when she pronounced, this is the Jewish baby, emotionally she was already crying. That's what it's telling you. That's why I'm saying that's what Chazal mean. Chazal mean that the angel hit him, gave him a little patch in the face, means that this was not by accident.
Right.
Everything was under the hashgacha. Under the hashgacha. Why was it under the hashgacha? Because the existence of Moshe Rabbeinu was not just a natural phenomenon. The Rambam says that God made Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, he was a special creation.
Right.
He was a special creation, and he was predestined to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. That's very. There is no other predestined individual, so to speak. Even Mashiach is not a predestined individual. Mashiach is someone who will reach a certain level and will do. But a person can be on a level where he has the capability of being Mashiach, like Rabbi Akiva thought about Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach.
Right.
But then when he died because of his sin, so he wasn't the Mashiach. Had he been predetermined that he must be the Mashiach, then he could not fail. There is no such thing. Not everybody is qualified. It's a high level. So, but there are people that are qualified, and historically, they could have been. But they didn't. So what's going to happen? Eventually Mashiach will come and he'll have the abilities and he'll succeed in the mission. But the only way that we'll know that he's the Mashiach is when he succeeds. And nobody can say in advance. Nobody could have said, I'm not getting into Lubavitcher politics. But I'm saying the very idea that people pronounce him, no, I'm just saying, the idea that people pronounce him Mashiach didn't make any sense. I was part of those debates. I said, I'm not saying he is or he isn't, but... He himself won't know, and nobody will know if he fulfills the messianic mission, then he's Mashiach, and everybody will know. But he will. You can't know beforehand, because what did Rabbi Akiva make a mistake about Bar Kokhba? Was he wrong? No. He thought that he's on the road, he has the chance, he can be the Mashiach. But when he failed, he knew that he wasn't the Mashiach.
Right.
That doesn't mean he was wrong. Okay, that's an aside. But Moshe Rabbeinu was a special creation. Nobody else but Moshe Rabbeinu could have been Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody else. Does that mean that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't fail in the mission? No. No, he had bechira. He had free will, because that's part of every human being. So had Moshe Rabbeinu, because you see, that whole business with, he went back to Mitzrayim, and then the angel came and tried to kill him, and then she took the flint, and she did the circumcision, the milah.
Right.
All right, so you see that what would have happened had she not thought of that? I don't know what would have happened. It means that God designed a special person who would have the qualifications to become Moshe Rabbeinu, who was in a class by himself as a Navi. But, of course, the rest is up to Moshe. As the rest is up to Moshe. It doesn't mean that Moshe could not be a sinner, because he's a human being. And any human being, he had to choose. But nobody else could be a Moshe Rabbeinu. Because that combination of qualities that resulted in that special Nevuah face-to-face, so to speak, which we went over in the Parsha, the whole Parsha in the Torah. That was only for Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu would live, that he would survive, was predetermined. That's why the Chazal is saying that he had to cry. He had to cry because God, of course, when he works his miracles, does so within the framework of the natural order. So she was a tzaddikus. She was there at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
She that. But even that, even so, she had a conflict, and she had to stretch. And even so, had he not cried at that moment, that's it. That's how close it was. And now what happens next is interesting. It's very, very interesting. So Miriam about Tom Rachosa. So Miriam... That's her great deed, that she didn't go away. She stayed. She never gave up. She was rewarded for that later on. It says the people waited 7 days for her because she waited for so she was there. And so then the sister said to the daughter of Pharaoh, didn't reveal anything. She didn't. She didn't say, "I'm the sister." You know, that's my brother.
I know a wet nurse.
No, I just know a wet nurse. Yeah, Haylech v'karas lachish mino ibrios, mino ibrios. Didn't say I'll get the baby's mother. Didn't want to give away any information. But from the ibrios, because you just said it's a, and they all say it makes more sense that you should be nursed by a. They even knew, you know, there must be something medical to that. I mean, of course, it's from the same. Well, I would say perhaps there is. No, your whole genetic makeup is the same and so on and so forth.
Nowadays.
Oh, well, no. If you're nursing, at least that's what they, that's an argument that would make sense. That a, not to mention, that a Jewish, who's likely to have more compassion and it would be someone from the same people, as opposed to a stranger, an Egyptian. So that would be, you know? So they may have believed that there's an advantage with the knowledge of the time, that there's an advantage, that there are certain physical qualities to the mother's milk, as a, not the mother, but the same. Well, but certainly in terms of who's going to take better care. Obviously, a Jewish woman will have a greater compassion.
Or, like with a lot of aristocratic women in Europe, in various dioceses, you didn't nurse your own children because it was not dignified.
So you got a wet nurse.
You got a wet nurse.
Well, that's what I said, wet nurse.
So
but
here she
why
is,
the Jewish
you know, she's royalty. She's not going to nurse this child. I mean,
she may not have even been able to nurse.
Right, but it's not dignified for Egyptian royalty for those women to look. So it's customary to have a wet nurse.
No, but also it would have been found out if she used someone that wasn't Jewish.
What would have been found out?
The existence of this Jewish child.
Because he was circumcised.
Right.
Well,
so
as
she
far
used
as
an Egyptian wet nurse, then
the gig would be up.
Well, one second. But then you could ask another question. And that is, if they couldn't retain the baby after 3 months, so then how can they retain the baby now? You're putting them back in the same situation, which was untenable. By giving it, in other words, if you follow me, they had the baby for 3 months and they had to get rid of it because the baby would be discovered and killed. Now Miriam is saying, I'll find the Jewish wet nurse and give it to the Jewish wet nurse.
Right. So where does
so
it
how
hide
are they going to protect? How are they
the
going to protect?
The Jewish wet nurse
well,
and
I
the
assume,
Jewish
kid. I assume what?
Pharaoh's daughter, she's protecting that situation.
That's what I would assume.
Of course.
I would assume that whatever way she was defying her father, we see she defied the father because eventually he comes to the palace.
Right.
So she prevailed upon her. Look, everybody, even, you know, Yimach Shemo, even Hitler had exceptions. There were Jews that he did not kill.
Right.
He had the power in the laws, when he, the Nuremberg laws and all that. Aryans, whoever the Jews are. But there was a clause in it that he had the right to declare whoever he wanted to be an Aryan. So there were certain Jews that were so brilliant militarily in this night.
Well,
they're
that
the book on that.
Yeah, right.
And they were, and he made them.
He
they
right.
got a Hitler.
Yeah.
A Hitler.
He was Matthias.
<Wait, laughs> terrible.
Sorry.
Sounds crazy. It sounds crazy, but even he, when he, if he had
he
a Jew,
was
he, that Jew was okay.
Right.
Okay. So the thing, that's what I'm saying. I agree with the point you just made, that it makes sense to say that there was a certain permission, protectia, as we say, because otherwise you're putting him back, a Jewish baby is going to be discovered and killed. So what'd you gain? Okay.
You know, there's something missing here.
What's that?
Is that between this saying, you know, Bat Pavlo is saying, this is a baby of the Jewish people, and all of a sudden Miriam pipes up. How does Miriam know that Bat Pavlo has decided to keep him?
She's watched the whole thing.
Well, she's watched the event, and it's, instead of asking, sometimes a suggestion is better. By taking action and suggesting, okay, let's get, in other words, keep the momentum. If I'm going to come over and say, oh, it's a Jewish baby, are you planning to keep him? Or are you planning not to?
She's facilitating it.
She's facilitating, right.
Yeah. She's facilitating. So that's a good lesson. That's a good lesson to learn. Uh-huh. That sometimes we should rather suggest to a person what they ought to do rather than ask them. Because once you ask them, it's obvious that you've decided to keep this baby, so let me go ahead.
So
you keep the momentum going. So that's
a very good, make it easy for her.
That's it, the point again is, look how many, well, we're learning lessons that we can apply to our own lives from here. Now, so Vatoma lo bas paro lechi. Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead.
She knew how to maneuver, how to manipulate. Go ahead. Vatelecha alma. She's just a kid, but she's obviously precocious. Vatikra is say my old.
And
she called
her
mom.
Together,
who's
yeah.
better than mom?
Yeah.
Okay, but she doesn't tell this to Bas Paro.
It's just that lady.
Just the proof is from the next pasuk. Vatoma lo bas paro. Daughter Paro said, "Hey lichi yes ayel razeh. Take this little fellow. Veheni keo li, and nurse him for me." Okay. Now you see.
You see it right.
Well, it's another reason why she wouldn't say that this is the mother. Because if it's the mother, then she's going to want to keep the baby. She won't get the baby back.
Right.
By this point, she wants the baby. So that's why she said, "Hey, K. Lee, don't forget, don't get attached.
You're a wait now.
Yeah, that's it.
That's your job, and I'll pay
not
you.
Not only that, but
I'll give you a
now, if she knew that, if it was the mother, you're not going to pay. You don't have to pay the mother to nurse her own baby. You see? And I'll pay the money. But the point is like this. Bear in mind, again, the Torah, whenever the Torah, because the Torah doesn't give you a lot of details, doesn't give you information. So when it gives you like what seems to be pretty trivial information, it's got to be a point. Why do I need to know that I'll pay you, nish pay you, who cares?
Right.
What difference does that make?
Right.
Okay? We're going to sit around and ask a question, oh, by the way, did she pay her for the? Who cares? No one's going to think of that. So right. Why do I need to know that she's going to pay for the service? Okay? But let's go on. Because I have one major question I'm going to do for tonight. I'm not going to be able to, this is sort of like a series. I'm going to do the incidents in the early life of Moshe. There's a few of them, so this will be number one. Then it says, "Vatikach ish hayeled vatnikeu." So she took the baby
and nursed it.
And she nursed it. Then it says, "Vayigdal hayeled." This is the first of two vayigdals. Okay, the lad grew. What do you mean grew?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean grew? So the Sforno says he didn't grow up into, because it's going to say if you took him later that he grew up. If you take a look ahead now. Just another pasuk. In fact, it's the very next pasuk.
Yeah, right.
It says, "Vayigdal Moshe." You see, then he was already Moshe. At this time, he's like a baby. So, what it means, I will go with the Sforno on this. It means he reached a point where he didn't have to be nursed anymore.
Right, he was weaned.
That's the first. He was weaned.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Sforno says. Okay.
And that's when she brought him to the daughter's
parents. See, until that point, apparently he didn't have a name. Because the mother, the nursing mother is not going to give him a name. It's none of your business. You know, she's just pretending to be a nursing, a wet nurse. So Vayigdal Yelah means he got old enough to leave. Mm-hmm. He was weaned. Okay? They're not gonna hold on to him longer than necessary because that itself could become suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Vatviyeh Labas Paro. She brought him to the daughter of Paro. Vayhi lo levein. And I guess you would say she adopted him as a son. Now, this is very, very interesting. Vatikra Shemo Moshe. And she called his name Moshe. Vatomer Kimen Amayim Mishisiu. Because I took him out of the water. Now, again, why is that really so significant? I have to know. All right, we knew one of them. All right. It's interesting. Does it have any real significance? She called him Moshe.
She called him or she called him Moshe? What's your question?
She named him Moshe. Okay. And now we know the reason. Okay. So that seems to be, again, not such a significant thing.
So
well, who cares?
I
guess you need to know his name.
Right.
Okay.
And
all right, so then once
you're
telling me the name, so why'd you call him Moshe? Okay, fine. Is this just a factual or does it have greater significance than that? That's what I'm saying.
Question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Were they all speaking the same
language? Okay. Now the thing is like this though, there is two significant. There's a huge significance to the name. Again with the Sforno. Sforno is very good on this though, Parsha. The name Moshe, according to the Sforno, okay, is in the present tense, and this calls our attention. See, because today. When they named, the names that were given in the Torah had a real significance.
Right.
They recalled, right? They didn't just name it after the father or the grandfather. You don't see that until later on, right? But the name, Yishmael, Kishama, Kishama, like God heard. Every name that's given virtually in the 12 Shvatim, Reuven, right?
Right.
See your son, God saw my affliction. And he gets
Binyamin.
So, Binyamin.
Yeah, right.
All the names generally had a significance.
Yeah, right.
Now, what about Moshe? So, Kimiramai, Mishisiu. Yeah, yeah. But the Sforno learns like this, that Vatikra Shemo Moshe, and she called his name Moshe, Mamalet Umoshe Esachera Mitzara, means that he's someone who saves and extricates other people from suffering. There was an idea to the name. Why? But Kimiramai, Mishisiu. Hatam Shekarasi Moshe, the reason I'm calling him Moshe, Lahoros, to indicate Sheyamale Desachirim, he's going to save other people. Ki umnam mishi siu
meramayim. And how did she see this?
Because
did she have Nebuah?
No, because I pulled him from the water. Acher Shehoyamutol Besacham, he was in the waters, and I pulled him out of the waters. Vizelo Hoya Kiim Bigzeres Irin. That she was saying this was she herself recognized apparently that this was a decree from on high, from the angels, that that he should be in this situation. And I said, okay, I don't know that she was a Navi, but you see, when you give a person, what we fail to realize is that a name has an impact upon a person. Right. Rav Moshe Feinstein said that the fact that he was named Moshe meant a lot to him, because Moshe was the one who paskin the halacha. Mm-hmm. So he was the great
lawgiver.
Yeah, the lawgiver. So, that's why today, you can't tell that to parents. They want to, they have this notion that someone died and they have to have a name, which is not really, there's no basis for that. Now, if the name has a positive significance, this person achieved something, and so on and so forth, it can have an impact. In and of itself, you know, you can't say that Rav Moshe Feinstein was Rav Moshe Feinstein because that was his name.
Right.
But given that he had
somehow
Yeah. A name has a significance. So you could see the fact, she understood that. She wanted this to be perpetuated, that there was some unusual element in the fact that you're alive.
Yeah, so the question is whether Egyptians did that. Come on, turn it on, man.
That there was some great significance to that, and that she was saying it.
Egyptians in general, do they ever call people like make that sort of thing? It might have been exceptional that she would call this child based on an episode in their life. Usually, I don't know if that
maybe they didn't. There's no reason to assume that they didn't, but. This was so unusual that even if you didn't, I mean, you would want this to be remembered.
Well,
you'd want this child to know about this.
But what do we know about the Egyptians? We know that they thought that they were divine.
Okay.
So if she saved this kid, she obviously felt that she had like divine impact on saving him. So the fact that he was saved by a divine person who she would assume she is.
Well, that's possible.
Daughter of Pharaoh.
But they had a thing that they were like Pharaohs.
That's true. But I don't know that we have to go that far, because at this level it makes plenty of sense. You've gone through something strange. Okay, she believes that this is not just by accident, but she believes that there's this. She saved. That reinforces it. It wasn't just a normal. She had to go against the decree of her father, so he was saved. So then she wants him to remember that and to use that, and you should save others.
Okay.
Well, she was his savior.
You should become a savior. No, this deed shouldn't go to waste. You exist only because of the fact that someone went out of their way
and saved you.
And yeah, so she has a tremendous.
She wants to piss them.
Oh, you have that. You hear that sometimes. I was saved from this, and therefore I have a. I survived. You hear that, people? I survived.
Yes.
And therefore, as a result, I have to do something because I survived.
That can make a tremendous impact upon you.
The mere fact that you were.
Again, there are other people.
If she raised him, she could have also told him, I pulled you out, I saved you.
Other people.
And that has a psychological impact.
There are other people, there are other people that go through all these things, and then they don't have gratitude or whatever it is. They don't, They're the benefactors of other people's kindness. There's some people feel that now I have a responsibility to do the same. And there are people that don't necessarily feel that. I'm sure you've been there, done that. Good.
Did I understand correctly that you think that Beth Togo knew that Moshe was destined?
No. I'm saying that, because it doesn't say that, she named him Moshe. But for her, it was very important. She apparently herself had a very strong sense of responsibility to other humans. She was a moral individual. And then when this event occurred, she recognized this as being beyond the Teva, whatever her theology was, I don't know. Okay, beyond the natural order. and that you perpetuate this. Don't let it go to waste, and that's the end of the story.
So
you are the benefactor of this. You should be someone who cares about others. That's the only
thing. It's a lot about her. It's tremendous. It's, when you're, what you're doing here is building up a picture of this woman as being quite extraordinary.
Correct. Okay, so these things, but I will say that there's an additional. So before I ask the question, what do we have to know? We see that there's plenty of information. It's not just, okay, I picked them out of the water. It's not just a fact. Okay, it's more than just a fact. But I think it'll have another big significance. Okay, so now, he's still a child, though. When it says by Igdal, it doesn't mean he's grown. He's a child. He just doesn't have to be nursed anymore. He's weaned. So he was brought to the door of Pavahila Levain. She adopts him. And calls him Moshe, as we just explained. Okay, now, the next pasuk. And you tell me what the problem is. It wasn't those days. I guess those days are the days when it's very, very bleak for the Jews. The Jews are being enslaved. Vayigdal Moshe, same way. Now, Moshe grows up. He becomes a man. We don't know exactly how old he is at this particular point when he goes out and makes... You know, he investigates the situation.
About 20, I think.
Well, I think if you go through the commentaries, because we know basically he was away when he ran away for about 60 years. And when he comes back, he's 80 years. Mm-hmm. So it could have been before 20, but it's in that teenager from the age, because he's not a man.
16
until he's
to 20.
Bar mitzvah, between 13 and 20, 15, 16, 20, whatever, something like that. And he goes out to his brothers, Vayar b'sivlosam. And he saw them in their their you know labors, their harsh labors, their slavery,
suffering.
Vayarish Mitzri, and he saw an Egyptian man, Maka Ish Ivri Me'echav, smiting a Jewish man from his brothers. What would you ask? See now the question you got to notice. So an extra word in the pasuk that doesn't need to be there, and so on. Those are the giveaways. Mm-hmm. What is it strange about the pasuk?
I don't know. I'm thinking if he grew up in the house of Paro, Bas Paro, how did he know that he was Jewish, so to speak?
Yes.
How did he know that those Ibrim are his brothers?
That's the big question of questions. That is, it presupposes that he knew. Not only that he knew that the Jews were his brothers.
Right, would he identify with the Jews? Well,
that he knew.
Who nursed them was...
But he was nursed. He's a little baby.
But you know, in those days, you nurse until at least two or three.
Two or three. Right. How much could he have known at two or three? I don't care how much of a genius you are. He's still two or three. Okay. Now, not only that he knew that fact. Okay, that you might say that his mother told him that, you know, mother told him, maybe. But it's not just that he knows, he has a tremendous connection, identification, and feeling. Because he wants to go out and see the situation. Mm-hmm. He wants to study the situation. So he knew about the situation. Take a look at, there's clearly a word that's repeated unnecessarily. Because it says, Vayetze el Echav, meaning the Jews.
And then
Vayar is missing Makish Ivri from Me'echav. We know it's Me'echav.
Right.
So why does that word have to be repeated? That's clearly, now, I'm just trying to give little tips to help you in terms of methodology. Whenever you see something like that, you got that's a problem.
Well,
that's a problem. Shouldn't be there.
It could be.
There is a sense to Vayetze, because normally it's not my problem.
The Emet of Dover says that he didn't usually.
No. The making is that, not that you shouldn't use the.
It's spoiler alert. In today's speech, it's spoiler alert.
Don't prevent yourself from thinking it through and coming up with your own ideas. Then see what the commentators have said. Then you'll appreciate what they've said much, much more. But to get back to your point on Vayetze, I would say that's a good point. Because it didn't have to say Vayetze. Because he simply said that...
He could have gone too.
He went too. And he saw them. No, Vayetze. So it's already telling you something, psychologically, Vayetze. Because normally, it's not my problem. It's not my problem.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on in society.
Mm-hmm.
There's 1,000 causes, there's different groups, right? So, it's not my problem. I'm involved with my life. He had a good life. He was not, and that's another reason, by the way, that the Chazal say that, or some commentators say, there's a reason why Moshe was not subjected to the slave, to the enslavement at all. He never suffered from a slave mentality. So that was part of the Ashkach as well. He was raised in the house. He was a prince.
Wow.
So to all intents and purposes, he wasn't really Jewish. We know that. We have a lot of successful Jews in America today, very successful. And what's his name? Zuckerberg, the guy who started Facebook. Okay, he made it. He made the American dream. To all intents and purposes, I'm not criticizing him. I don't see any sense that he's Jewish. He lives like an ordinary American. I'm not blaming him for that, because that's the way, that's assimilation. So for him, for whatever reason, to now suddenly get involved in an Israeli cause, that would be like, he went out of his mindset, he went out of his...
Sister, on the other hand, is a Shomer Shabbos.
Okay, that can happen.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you wouldn't say Vayetze, you wouldn't say about her that she went out. Vatetze, you wouldn't say Vatetze, because that's her norm. But for him, it would be going out of your groove. So Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us that he didn't have to. He was a prince, whatever he was being trained for. But no, he went out of that. Because now, that only strengthens the question. More, why?
Yeah.
What hold did they have on him? I mean, maybe he knew that technically he came from this people, but that's like, that doesn't warrant how much he did. Because if that's all it was, so all right, took a look.
Thank you.
Let me see what's going
on. He knew he was
Jewish. Took a look. He might have made a report. But to get so involved that he risked his life.
Right.
Okay, he got involved.
And then
he smote the Egyptian, and he hit him in the...
sand.
Right?
He ripped
it
off.
Okay, now, next time, I'm not going to go into the story of what happens the next day with the two Jews, okay? Mm. And how did they find out? Whatever, that's next time. So, okay, the next segment, we'll take that up. But I want to at least see if I can get this... I think we all agree that the second word, the second use of Meyachav might be a little bit superfluous, redundant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's always a target if something is redundant. But again, there's nothing, it would seem, there's nothing in the story that would explain why he had this tremendous compassion and connection to the Jews. How did he know? But we see later on, later on, we see the burning bush and God speaks to him. And he clearly knows that his brother is Aaron, because he says to God, "Shlach na biyat tishlach."
Right.
Send the mission with the one that you normally send. And the Rashi says that's a reference to Aaron. Now we know clearly that it's the case, because when he goes, Hashem said, "And Aaron will come out to greet you,
right,
and he'll see you," because he was bothered.
Yes.
He was bothered that Aaron was feeling insulted. He's the other one.
Right.
And God says, "No, he'll see you, and he'll rejoice in his heart." Where does he get all this? That implies that there's some kind of relationship with Aaron. Where do we find it? That was the question, right? Where do we find it?
Acted mother.
That we do see that Moshe Rabbeinu
had an acute sense of morality.
Had a very, very developed sense of justice.
Yes.
Justice, I would say.
Right.
But you see, it wasn't limited to the Jews. I'm giving away stuff. You see, because later on...
With the girls and the girls.
So that's...
He's trying to steal
right?
Water,
it was
right,
more
right,
of,
right.
It was universal.
No, but you would see whose adopted mother was.
If you want it, you could say things. You could posit things. They're not crazy. You could say he was weaned. But how old? He's got to be a baby. And how much... unless you want to say that he was some kind of a miraculous baby.
So no baby. Forget
about
the
baby.
So
let's forget about that.
What
let's
about
he was
his,
a normal,
his adopted mother?
Let's assume he was normal.
Mm-hmm.
He was normal. The adopted mother didn't know anything. She didn't know who the mother was.
But she gave
she
him
didn't
a
know
sense
about
of right and wrong.
I'm not questioning the sense of right and wrong. I'm accepting the sense of right and wrong. It's not my question. My point is, he showed
what was his connection to the Jews.
To the Jews. He demonstrates a tremendous connection to the Jews.
It is not beyond
a... Follow the story. It makes perfect sense. It has to do with one word. It has to do with one word. Moshe. That strange name. That strange name. And a child is very interested in his name. Okay? It's an unusual name. Right? I don't think every Egyptian kid is named after Maya Mishisu.
No,
besides, it's only natural that she named him, and she gave a reason for the name that she would want him to know. So he would ask her, what's the story? Okay. So she would tell him.
Dad was killing all the boys.
She would have to tell him. I don't know how she would tell him that there was this decree. Okay, and so on and so forth.
I saw you.
And I saw you. Okay. And then he's a smart kid now. I mean, he's not a baby anymore. We know he was precocious. That's no question about it. So if that's the case, you're not my mommy. you adopted me.
Mm. Oh, he's got a birth parent thing.
Who nursed me?
Yeah.
Who nursed me? Who nursed me? Oh, so she paid a salary.
Mm.
So you tell
them
that records, they had the records. Sure, they like today. She kept paying her. She made out checks, whatever it was, there records. So here's the name.
So he ransacked her desk,
okay,
found the pay stubs.
He didn't even have to ransack. I'm sure she had no problem. So then he went. Then when he went and he found out, see, there was a record. See, he found out. That's my mom.
That's
and then
great.
Miriam. And then he became part of the family. In other words, he had permission, as he grew up in those years, to visit. Once he discovered, in other words, my theory is that everything was set up over here so that he would discover his parent, his true parents.
Because otherwise, why
and
are
she
we
didn't
told
try.
That she was paid?
Right, exactly. That's what I asked before. Do I need to know that she was paid?
Yeah.
Because she was paid, there would be, otherwise she'd forget. How the heck do
there
I know? But
record.
Now it's a name.
How do I find
this
it?
Check was made out to so-and-so.
Oh,
so
that's
you can
great.
Find you can find that. He could find out who it was.
That's
Once he found out who it was, that's the end of the story. They took him in, they told him, and he would visit them. He would visit them, and this is my brother, Aaron. They developed a relationship, and they told him about the Jewish people, and he became attached to the Jewish people. And then he's in the. Then he decided, I have to
That's
get involved.
That's a great insight.
I have to get involved. And when he gets involved like a brother. He gets involved like a brother, not like Stom. Okay, my mom told me I was born with the Jews. And I was pulled out of the water. You have a lot of Americans like that. That their parents come from Europe. Now they're in America. Doesn't mean anything to them. They're Americans.
Right.
They don't stand up for Israel or anything like that. I'm suggesting that the way the story is structured, there was a path. The path was created that he'd find his way back. And he found his way back. And this is what gave him the inspiration. Now, there's one more question over here. The double mention.
Yeah.
The double mention.
It says
Alechav. Vayetze Alechav. Why? Because he already knew they were his brothers.
Right.
And he decided, that was so strong that he's giving up. He's leaving the palace. He's going to see what the story is with his brothers. He's going to see.
Yeah.
No, because you have to see. I don't know. Maybe there's some justification for it. Maybe the Jews did something wrong. In fact, he criticized the Jews later, when he saw the dust in the Avirim. Okay, fine. So look at this. It's a real insight into human nature. And it says that he saw Vayigal Moshe Vayetze Alecha Vayarish Limlozam. Okay, that's step number one. Vayarish Mitzri Maket Ish Ivri
Meyachav.
In other words, there's plenty of people that look into the situation. You want to help?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll help. I help. Give me how much? Make out a check. Make out a nice check.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you can have, now the guy's in danger, and you have to put your life on the line.
Mm-hmm.
So he's my brother. If I just have to go out and see, and then I go home and I make a check, he's my brother. I gotta help him. Yeah, but what if you have to put your life on the line? Is it still your brother? He said, I can't. I can't take any chances. I can't die. I could lose my job. I could. He's not my brother anymore. That's the pshat. It's telling you the
depth.
Transformation, the depth.
Yeah.
It's one level to go out and show concern. And then I'll come back. Like, then we'll make a commission. During the Holocaust, you know how many commissions they sent out to study? And they had the Evian conference.
Oh, yeah.
And we have to have a conference. And da-da-da-da. Oh, but now, in order
take
to do that...
In.
Yeah. How many people are you prepared to take in?
None.
Well, the St. Louis is off the coast.
And, one is too many.
You won't take... One is too many. Are you still concerned? Are they still your brothers? Well, not so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Not so fast.
Right.
See, that's what I think is the pshat.
Wow.
That it was Vayechav. It was Echav enough to go out and take a look. And maybe he would have made a check. Or he would have written a report to Paro. And you know what would have happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It would have been filed. This
and
that.
Right.
Yeah, I tried.
I tried
to help my brothers.
I did my best. Yeah, yeah.
But what about this guy that's getting killed and you have to put your life on the line? Is he still your brother? Yeah, he's still my brother. That's why it has to repeat it. Because there's two different... Clearly, it's two different situations. Okay, it is to say that Moshe Rabbeinu is a very unique situation. We Jews in America, anyways, have to. But Jews anywhere today, because you can be in Israel and still not be Jewish, because there's a whole secular culture you can get absorbed in. So, Moshe Rabbeinu was the epitome that he, and I think it has to do with the fact that he found his way back to his home.
And so
that was the Hashkacha. That was the Hashkacha.
You have American
that he would
kids
grow up as a Jew.
Who come here.
He would grow up as a Jew. But let me just finish the point.
Oh, yeah.
And that is that he got the benefits of being in the palace. He didn't suffer the indignity of being a slave, never did. and he had access to all the wisdom in the world. And that's why he developed morality. Morality and ethics he got from his family as well. Yes, but he never identified. His mother was also. But he never identified as a mitzri.
I think it was vital. I mean,
because when the time came, it was Echav. He was not a mitzri. He was an ish ivri.
Right.
Ish ivri. They say ish mitzri. He said, that's what they told their father.
Right.
That's because
right.
he appeared like an Egyptian. But that wasn't a definition of what he was. Yeah, I'm sorry.